and welcome to the Millennial Health Podcast. I'm Dr. Jaisharee Allen, a board-certified family physician who's passionate about the health of my fellow millennials. I know we're booked and busy, but your first wealth is your health. So I'm taking some of my most important health messages and bringing them here to you on this podcast. My goal is to share some valuable information and draw awareness to some important health topics, but I encourage you to please consult your physician for personalized medical advice. It's no secret that we're in the midst of conversations around racism in this country, and I've been struggling with my voice and the way I would like to speak up and speak out regarding the injustices in our country. And I found that podcasting is my thing. It's the way I will get my message out. It's the way I will reach my audience. And so I've invited a few guests who are also using their platforms to speak up, to share with us on the Millennial Health Podcast, give us some insight into their experiences, give us some advice on how we too can become advocates and effective in the messages that we're hoping to get across. So today on the Millennial Health Podcast, we're joined by Dr. Jason L. Campbell, otherwise known as the TikTok Doc. He graduated from Ohio State University College of Medicine and was a Division III All-American track and field athlete at Emory University. He's currently a physician resident in the Department of Anesthesiology at Oregon Health and Science University in Portland. Dr. Campbell, welcome to Millennial Health.
Millennial Health, doctor, thank you for having me. Very excited to be here. Very excited to have a chance to talk with you on so many different matters that are near and dear to my heart. Let's get started.
Let's jump right in. Tell us a little about your journey to medicine, because you are on one hell of a ride here.
Oh man, it is such a blessing to have the ability and the platform to talk about things that I've always been preaching about. You know, one of my homies, she said, Jason, you used to have 1,700 followers. You used to be preaching at 1,700 followers. Now look at you. I said, excuse me, that was 3,000 followers. And yes, look at me now. But I can't talk about my journey without talking about my mother. And let's even start with my grandmother, who's 96, almost 97 years old. I talk about her on my blog. You know, got a master's degree in education from American University back in the early 1960s. John F. Kennedy spoke at her graduation ceremony to then create my mother, Dr. Lucille Adams Campbell, who was the first Black female PhD epidemiologist in the country. And so I saw, back when I was 5, 6, 7 years old, young Black boy on the campus of Howard University. My mother was the director of the Howard University Cancer Center for like 13, 14 years. So this is where Howard, I mean, all the physicians, scientists, clinicians, CEOs, just leaders were Black and brown men and women, and their knowledge, their confidence, their humility, their everything is what I grew up in. And so imagine growing up with that. I said, hey, I'd like to be like one of these persons one day. Now you take that and you add that in with my track and field background. Mm-hmm. And as a still a current runner and former track and field athlete, I had suffered different kinds of injuries and ailments that then resulted in me going in to see orthopedic surgeons and some primary care sports medicine physicians. And this all, you know, if you add them together, said, hey, you know, being a physician one day would be nice to be able to help people and to be able to combine my love of sports and athletics as with medicine. Mm. And so that's what led me here. And what that journey looked like was, it looked like going to undergrad at Emory University in Atlanta, mm-hmm. studying anthropology and human biology with a minor in sociology. Well, graduating, realizing I needed to do more though to increase my academic record. I did city year to help serve the underserved and forgotten population in DC in the inner city for 1 year. And then I did a master's at Georgetown and George Mason to do what I just mentioned, which was to increase my academic record and strengthen my chance of getting to a competitive medical school. And by the grace of God, ended up at The Ohio State University College of Medicine. Great experience. Got a chance to do a lot of leadership there and to be just an active member of, you know, Buckeye Nation. Mm-hmm. And now here I am at Oregon Health and Science in Portland, one of 8 Black male resident physicians, immense amount of pride in my department and our residency. And so here we are.
Wow. That's an incredible journey. Absolutely incredible, you know? And then even you're also a writer at this point too. So not just a resident physician. Tell us a little more about that.
Yeah. You know, so, you know, this is when you talk about sometimes people can give you harsh advice and change your life with other advice. And sometimes they're together. So Dr. Amy Brown, she's married now, 2 kids, and has a different last name. But Dr. Brown, I was meeting with her, and she says, you know, some of these testing things we got to figure out. You know, you just got over that score. You know, this time you just got over. You know, we really need to figure this out, okay? Because this can be better. So we went through that, and then it got to other things that are portfolio coaches review with us. And so then she reviewed the writing. She's like, oh, but you're one hell of a writer. And I tried to downplay it, but I said, oh, are you sure? She's like, hey, listen, you can write. Mm-hmm. And I had heard that before from ex-girlfriends and current, I had heard that you write examining personal statements and stuff like that, that I had a talent. So I started doing some of these reflections in medical school, one for my own mental stability, but also because it was a requirement. And I always enjoyed it. While my classes would be like, oh, I got 250 words. Oh. I was like, oh, this is great. I'm going to write 500. I'm just writing. And then I got out here to Portland, Oregon, and I reached out to my old high school English teacher, Amina Baith. And I said, hey, I have this, you know, Colin Kaepernick piece. This is back when, you know, all that stuff was transpiring with him and Nike and the kneeling. And I think I want to try to publish it. What do you think? She's like, oh, op-eds is what you want to do. And why don't you try for your local one? I'm like, well, that's like the Oregonian. Okay. It's kind of big, but it's not the Washington Post. I submitted it on maybe Sunday, and on Thursday, I submitted it on Thursday. That next Tuesday, they're like, yeah, we're going to publish this. I was like, and it's been a roller coaster from there. Chicago Tribune, the Seattle Times a few times. I love Seattle Times, Cleveland.com. And so I'm right now working on this piece for Father's Day. That's, I think it's one of my best pieces. So let's see, LA Times, we'll see who might publish it. So that's in the works. So hopefully I have a piece to share with you guys next Sunday.
Next Sunday. I just read the one you published in the Seattle Times, Growing Up a Black Man in America, Why Our Souls Are on Fire.
I appreciate you. That title, my original title was kind of like that. It was like Why America Burns, Like Our Souls. But even that, I love the title, because I just wanted to share with people that, like, even an accomplished Black man goes through these things. And unfortunately, I just wish that whether you're accomplished or not, just being a human and decency was something that was given to all of us, because unfortunately it's not. And I mean, I remember watching old comedy shows, you know, you talk about Driving While Black, you know, DWB.
Yeah.
It ain't DUI, it's DWB. And so people are like, what? I was like, oh, no, we can go old cop Martin Lawrence.
This is a real thing. And I love that you just said that. I'm here like doing all sort of football dives, right? Because this victim blaming and victim shaming and trying people for their own deaths, we need to speak up against that. You know, even recently with the situation with Amy Cooper and Mr. Cooper in Central Park, you know, this happened just earlier that week before George Floyd. You know, I recall some of the narratives that were being put out regarding his background and his education. And I'm like, no, that doesn't matter. We're talking about a human being.
Right? Yeah, but that's the thing, man. I mean, I always, you know, if you are Black and poor, America has almost forgotten about you. Policing and over-policing in the poor Black communities is horrific. I always knew that, you know, I could say, oh, that's what you want to do? Well, you can talk to my mother and then she'll call a lawyer, you know, and I always knew that probably in the back of my head, I had that ability. But like one of the guys I was on this phone call with, who's a professional boxer, he said, you know, when it happened to me, I was 15 or 16, and what was I going to do? I had nobody to call. I had nothing, you know, I, you know, bare the money in my pocket, you know? So, and that's a travesty, but that is certainly what many young Black men have seen from the police force. And I personally, I've had great experiences with cops, and I have had obviously that experience I wrote about in the blog post where there was no physical issue. It was just this kind of insinuation that maybe I was lying about there not being a weapon in my car, or maybe that there was a chance that there was a weapon mm-hmm. in my car, you know, with the way I was dressed and the fact that it was a Lexus or the part of town that I was in, or whatever that cop had seen before. Mm-hmm. But it was just, these things need to change. Mm-hmm. I don't agree with the whole defund the police, but clearly reforming ain't working. So you tell me what to do, but I don't know.
Mm-hmm. There are some serious conversations nationwide taking place regarding that now. You know, I'm based in Minnesota, so definitely, yeah, on the edge of my seat, kind of watching that. So I'm actually from Jamaica, born in Jamaica, grew up in New York City, but I did my residency at Mayo, so that's how I ended up in Minnesota, and I'm still here now.
Yeah, brilliant. So. Awesome.
But no, so the murder of George Floyd, again, here in Minnesota, sparked this national uprising and kind of a long overdue discussion on racism in this country. You know, you've spoken about this somewhat, you know, and you talked about the articles you've written in the past using your voice to add to this conversation, you know, but what are some other ways that this has impacted you or even your friends or colleagues? Because I think one of the things, you know, with us as Black doctors, you know, when these things are happening, we're like, this could be me. This could be my father. This could be my friend who I went to high school with who didn't end up coming to medical school and doesn't wear this white coat or has this position of power, you know? So how do we even start unpacking that?
Yeah, I think that because you have such an atrocious 8 minutes and 46 seconds that you cannot unsee. You have an 8 minutes and 46 seconds that you cannot make up a story behind. Oh, well, he was resisting. Oh, well, he was threatening the officers. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, he was, there's no rhetoric that you can make up about that to even in the least satisfy what Officer Chauvin did on that day. And that's something that unfortunately is probably something that we've needed to have out there so that people understand that this does exist, that mm-hmm. there is something that's what happened to just conversing with people.
Mm-hmm.
As a police mm-hmm. officer, we know you have the power. You're an authoritative figure, but just like firefighters or doctors, mm-hmm. you know, we're there to protect and serve and heal. We all are that. I mean, officers can heal too. Physicians can protect, you know, and the best thing I heard that I think has to be said is that there's not a song that says F the firefighters. So if police did their job, and I think that they do their job more than not, I think that there are some bad seeds, but these bad seeds have clearly overgrown mm-hmm. and need to be eliminated from mm-hmm. the force mm-hmm. or retrained or both or something. Mm-hmm. And so, this has affected the non-Black community more. I have allies that are like, oh, no, mm-hmm. want to be anti-racist, ready to walk against the escalator of hatred and bigotry and prejudice and against the and remove myself from this jurisdiction of hatred and of anti-Black mm-hmm. and of Blacks as only athletes and that they cannot be more than athletes. And so finally, you're really having a discussion with people that didn't want to hear it before. Oh, I don't say that. I don't say the N-word. Listen when people are using that word in a or are, you know, using the F word towards gays or I don't partake in that. Mm-hmm. It's not just about partake. It's like, hey, I'm going to distance myself from you if
mm-hmm. or speaking
you cannot change
up and saying sure. something, you know. And I think one of the other things too, recognizing that this is not personal for most of the people in our lives or most of the allies in our lives. It's understanding that there are institutional structures here at play that you are not individually responsible for, but you have to understand how you play into them. you know?
Right.
And I think that's really, really important. So you've been really vocal, you know, in this public sphere. So what advice can you offer to other millennials, thinking of who we are as millennials, right? So as of this recording, we're in the year 2020. Millennials are between the age of like 25 to 40. So young career, you know, junior faculty or even residency, fellowship, you know, so thinking of the vulnerable phase in the career, right, in which we are at this point in time, how would you encourage us to speak out against racism in our workplaces and in our networks, you know, similar to the way you're doing so boldly?
Well, thank you. Well, the first way that you speak out is by your actions in the workplace. So I work hard at work. I am diligent, compassionate, punctual. I'm a team player. I am there to learn. I recognize that I am still a resident, even with such a large platform, that me as a trainee is still that in the hospital. Try to be ever so much humble and there to really, you know, to garner a strong education. So it starts there. Like if I'm an a-hole and I am not trying to learn from my attending physicians, I'm not going to have the support that I otherwise would, right? So I'm there and I am, when I, like my program director says, when I'm about the program or when I get to a program, it's like all in, all in. That's the first thing. And as a medical student, I did some stuff at Ohio State as well for some activism, but at Ohio State, my biggest thing was supporting the student body as I became president in my fourth year of medical school. And it was just like, hey, what can I do for you? Like, you know, and give me a lot of respect to the attending physicians. And once again, just like being respectful so that people would say, oh, I not only do I support Jason for his message, I want to support him because I like the guy that he is. So that, you have to, you know, the spotlight's on me now, you know, as a resident, you know, if, you know, I can't, you know, can't, like my boy said, I can't be on Good Morning America on Thursday and on Friday can't place the arterial line. I think I'm like, come on, man, what's up? You know, so that's you really, you know, so I know that I have to be extra tight when I am taking care of patients, extra focus, you know, Black in medicine is a spotlight, Black in medicine. And you got a platform.
A friend of mine, who you may know, Elvis Francois, we went to Meharry together and we went to Mayo together. We've had this conversation you've got to be on it. You know, if you're going to have these platforms and speak out, you know, there's no room for error, right? In the OR. You know,
I mean, he's an orthopedic surgeon, so they got a lot of room for error. Come on, that. No, but, what's a bone? Oh, one bone, two bone? No, but I mean, yeah, and it's nice to hear him say that because he's obviously taking kind of fall in some of his footsteps. And so, no, it's definitely an everyday. You know, you wake up, and you're like, you know, I run through my head of what my day's gonna look like. To ensure that you know, I'm thinking through any possible loopholes or gaps that could be there, how I would address that if it happened, what I need to do to be primed and ready, you know. And this is something that I think that many of us need to do, but now I've started doing it. So sometimes I'm actually a little bit extra anxious in the morning, but then as the day goes, it's like they hit, perfect. You know, it's almost like running. I ran the 800 meters in college, and you know, there was a, you know, yes, it's racing, it's tenacious, but there was also like a strategy, and you knew that like if you started too slow, you were screwed. If you started too fast, you were screwed. You had to really kind of be on that pace, that trajectory, and then it's like, okay, now just let it rip, you know. And that's kind of how my mornings, I feel like they are.
Okay. While we're on that question too, I do want to say thank you. We spoke about this a little offline before we started recording, but for accepting my invitation to speak on this podcast. I mean, Good Morning America, Explore the Space. You've been in some really amazing places. So I genuinely appreciate you using your power and your voice to try to amplify those of us who are also trying to use our smaller platforms to also make some change. No.
Hey, if we're not working together, then we're not going to make the change that we need. I cannot do this alone, nor do I want to. You know, especially as Blacks, there's just not enough of us to try to do this alone. So yeah, if you're in this for yourself, then you know you're not someone that I want to be associated with. I'm in this for all of us that that want to be compassionate care mm-hmm. providers, but I'm in this for those that look like me that have struggled or that haven't, and that are saying, hey, like, please help me. And I'm like, I got you. Cause someone, there was a time where I said, please help me to someone else. And they put their hand down and pulled me up.
Mm-hmm. I salute you. I salute you for that. I want to jump into another topic because I was trying to get your attention before all of this even happened, because I was just so impressed with the way that you were changing the narrative of Black men in medicine, right? Through your dance routines. I mean, you really took the world by storm with that. Could we talk a little about that? You know, I went
dancing.
I've got a special place in my heart for Black men in medicine.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I'll tell you though, I can make it. I'm trying to go on Dancing with the Stars. So if you know anybody, wow. It is young Black boys just need to know that you can know all the hip hop songs, you can dance, you can have fun, and you can be a physician. It doesn't have to be this rigid aspect. My homegirl Arj McCaven, she'd be killing it on the dance floor. She'd be mad I embarrass her. And now she's a clinical instructor at Northwestern Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology, which basically, you know, she's a new attending at age 30. True Black girl magic. She was a chief resident. Mm-hmm. Emory University, 3.99 GPA. Only grade that was less than an A was a B plus in organic chemistry. Come on, man. So, you know, because you can't make this stuff up, right? So just to know that you can be, you know, multi-talented, you can be smart, you can be a dancer, you can be an athlete. We can do it all. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I try to appreciate young Black boys. And I know you, the young Black sisters, some of y'all already got it made. You know, I got to talk to my young fellas here to let them know, like, go get that scholarship and then put that education to use. Don't just get that scholarship and then if you, you know, unfortunately get hurt or something of that nature, that then all of a sudden it's like, well, you don't have a backup plan or you don't have another goal to reach. You know, an education and your mind is just mm-hmm. too much to waste. So valuable. So that's been my mission. And that's something, like I said, I've been preaching that for years.
Mm-hmm. Then another topic I really wanted to touch on, mental health.
Oh boy. In the Black community, it's tough.
It is. And I have appreciated your vulnerability and how candid you've been in many of the posts that you've put out there on social media, because I think one of the things that's really killing us is our silence and suffering alone, you know, and thinking we're the only person going through this. Could we talk a little about, you know, how you got to a point of sharing this with your audience, and what sort of advice would you offer, not just to other Black doctors, but even millennials that are just out there or kind of battling this? Because it's a real thing right now.
It is. Yeah. I mean, I think a lot, I mean, they say that about a third of medical students or physicians are on some kind of anti-anxiety medication. And so that was me back in medical school. And I had never experienced any anxiety before that. Let me repeat that. I had never experienced any form of anxiety or depression before medical school. Some familial history, but it just was one of those things that it came on. And had I not gotten the help I got and gotten an extended deadline to take my step one examination, had I not gotten the medications I needed, I don't know if I'd be here right now. As far as what I say, I just mean with respect to the success that I've had. So I don't want you to suffer in silence, and I don't want you to detract from the success that you could have not getting the help that you deserve. You deserve, not need, you deserve. Let's change the language. Let's change the rhetoric. Mm-hmm. I know that there's taboo around some of these medications, but I'm telling you, the non-Black counterparts are taking whatever medications they need to be successful. Mm-hmm. And you should be too. And ain't nothing wrong with that. And hopefully you're seeing more athletes that you look up to and celebrities they look up to speak out to. Mm-hmm. to the need to address mental health. And that, I mean, I can see that you have a broken tibia mm-hmm. or a shattered humerus, but if you tell me that you're having, you know, insomnia and you're having a lack of appetite and you're having, I'm trying to go through all hit me up, sister. You know, if you're having these symptoms, then I'm saying, oh, okay, you might have some anxiety or depression. That's okay. Generalized anxiety disorder, 3 out of 5, you know, we got you. And we'll look into it, you know, for our psychiatry and mental health counterparts that are there for you. So mm-hmm. it's really important. And it's easier to be vulnerable once you've kind of made it. You know, I had some vulnerability along the way, but it's much easier to look back now and speak to the vulnerability. And here we are
today. Another thing I want to stress to you is therapy, 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 mm-hmm. therapy. You know, one of the things I've done in my clinical practice, I've put together a list of all the local therapists in the area, and I have it printed and sitting there on my desk. So if I make the recommendation, at least I have the names, the address, and the numbers right there, kind of ready to go for patients too. So that's another huge one that I think, you know, sometimes just getting the right people to kind of help you formulate the right strategies, I think is a really important thing too. So to close out, if you could get on a mountaintop and say one thing to millennials, it doesn't have to be health related. It doesn't have to be related to anything we spoke about today, but you could only deliver one message to millennials. What would it be?
Entitlement is the antagonist of success. Stay humble, stay motivated. Attitude and energy matters. There's no reason to subdue yourself because others think that you're too much. If people think that you're too much, those are not your people. One more time, everybody. If people think that you are too much, those are not your people. Amen. JC of the DC, at Dr. JC of the DC. Please reach out anytime. Email me.
Awesome.
I appreciate you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining me today on the Millennial Health Podcast. Though my goal is to share some valuable information and draw awareness to some important health issues, I encourage you to please consult your physician for personalized medical advice. I hope this information was beneficial to you. And if so, please subscribe to the Millennial Health Podcast and share with your friends. Please also leave us a review. If you have questions or comments, feel free to reach out on Instagram or Twitter at Dr. Jay Sheree, DrJaySheree.